And welcome back to your extended news at noon. Tracy Morgan in with you, of course. And on the phone with me is Larry Stock. Now, you may know his name, you may not, but you do know his work at the BC3, at the BC3 Cultural Center. He's the former director, and I say former because Larry has decided to retire. So, Larry, thank you so much for being on the phone with me.
Thanks for having me on today, Tracy. Thank you.
It is nice to talk to you, and we hate to see you retire, but it's a fun conversation to have with you because of what you've done and what you brought to the area, and we'll talk about that. But first, let me ask you, what brought you to the decision to retire after 19 years?
Well, the fact that the theater had been closed since March because of the pandemic, and the prospect is that it's not going to be back open again through the spring semester. And the fact that I had 18-plus years in, almost 19 years in at the college, and looking forward to retiring. I was planning in a year or so to do it, probably in 2022. But it just worked out that this was the time to do it.
Yeah.
The timing on it was just,
it made more sense. Yeah.
I was planning to do it after the 20th Performing Arts Series, which would have been the spring of 2022, 20 years and out. But yeah. This worked out well.
Well, let's talk about your career a little bit, because I find it so fascinating in what you do. Being in this industry, we get to see the backstage of things where the public doesn't necessarily see that. And so I find it intriguing and fun to be able to talk about that. But let me ask you this first. Why was it so important to you to bring to Butler what you did, or develop for Butler what you did?
Well, when I took the job in 2002 when the theater first was opening, I was charged with developing a performing arts series to bring things to the Butler area that aren't normally in Butler, that you'd have to travel to Pittsburgh or Erie or Youngstown or somewhere else to see. And I was just challenged with that. And then, of course, with bringing in, having the theater available for local organizations to use, it was just a perfect opportunity to bring all this wonderful entertainment to Butler.
Why was it important for you to have people come and have a wonderful experience? I think it's a little different when you're developing it, but there's a different feel when you know people had a great time.
Well, it was something that I had always enjoyed, being part of theater. From my earliest days and going back to junior high school, I enjoyed working in the performing area, performing arts, and I had performed on stage, backstage, in every capacity you could think of along the way through high school, college, and then beyond in community theater. And then I had the wonderful opportunity to work in professional theater in South Carolina, working for the Gatlin Brothers when they opened their theater back in, what year was it? I guess 1994.
Was that Myrtle Beach?
Go ahead.
Was that Myrtle Beach in South Carolina?
Myrtle Beach, South Carolina, yes.
Yeah, I remember the Gatlin Theater, yeah.
Yeah, I was there when the theater opened, and I got to work with the Gatlin Brothers, which was an amazing experience. A lot of people don't know who they are anymore, but they were an amazing country performers, back, and they were kind of ahead of their time. They were not just the, they were more like the current wave of country artists that we have.
Sure.
In other words, they were performing their own music that they wrote. Larry Gatlin wrote the music, and they wanted to perform it. Back in the day, that was not the way it worked. When you were a recording artist, you performed other people's songs. They didn't want people to perform their own songs. And of course, that's completely changed. The music industry has completely changed over the years. But anyway, they were consummate professionals, and working for them was just an incredible experience. So I learned a lot working with them. And then the theater itself was a 2,000 seat venue in Myrtle Beach. We hosted Broadway tours like they do from the Benham Center in Pittsburgh. We were the stop in the area for the Broadway tours. So I got to work with a lot of the major tours, major shows that came through, and helped them with that, see how that worked. So I got so much experience with that. And when the opportunity came up for this theater to open in Butler, it was a good opportunity. It was like, this is really going to work out, I think. I really enjoyed doing it. And I really got, really enjoyed seeing the people enjoy the shows once the things, the lights went up. The house lights would go down and the stage lights would come up and I would sit there and the performance would start. And it just made me feel really good to see that and to see the people enjoying the show.
So talk about BC3 and how you were able to translate your experience into this area, because we're not Myrtle Beach, but what you brought to town was so special for Butler County. And when you're talking about the Gatlins, I am familiar with that theater, and it's a large, large theater. And so when you come to Butler, how is it that you brought like the Tamburitzins in and the Pittsburgh Civic Light Opera and all of these different organizations, the Pittsburgh Philharmonic and beyond? I mean, you had some large acts come into the area.
Well, yes, I had quite a few different national and international artists perform. And it was partly due to hitting the ground running when I started the job in 2002. I became part of some organizations, including a group called PA Presenters, which is a statewide organization of people who present entertainment in their venues and theaters. And I became part of that and got to know a lot of people. There was a lot of programs at the time. There was a program called Pennsylvania Performing Arts on Tour, which had a roster of Pennsylvania artists. And I remember the first season, I used their roster, their book of artists, to book the acts in the theater for the first year, because I didn't have the connections until at that point. But once I got through that, I started becoming part of attending conferences, performing arts conferences, the Performing Arts Exchange through the South Arts Organization. I would attend those conferences. I've traveled all over for that, to like Norfolk, Memphis, Baltimore.
Yeah.
And then the conference was held a couple times in Pittsburgh, where you would see showcases of different artists performing and meet the agents and the people that represented those artists. So they got to know people, and it got to the point that I had artists and agents that knew what I needed, my budgetary limitations would be, and they would call me and say, hey, we've got a great group coming your way. Are you interested? So I would get some really good things, leads that way, to be able to curate the season, to be able to bring things into Butler that hadn't been here before. The Tamburitzins had performed at the college at BC3 many years ago, in the old Convocation Center, before now Founders Hall. But that was years and years ago. And the new iteration of the group had not performed in the Butler area for quite a while. So that just was kind of worked out to be a very fortuitous thing to happen there. You mentioned Civic Light Opera. That was for the big gala grand opening when they opened the theater in 2002. I needed something to put on stage. And again, I was, what am I going to do? Well, I had heard from somebody I knew in the area that the Civic Light Opera has this little show that they put on every year to promote their upcoming season. And even though it was after their season, I was able to get those people back to put on a little showcase for me. And it was a perfect thing for what we were doing for our Black Tie Gala for the opening of the theater. So it worked out very, very well.
But that moment, Larry, didn't come without stress. I know about the lights.
Oh, no, it was quite stressful.
Oh, my, because you didn't have any lights. You thought you had lights, but then all of a sudden you didn't.
What happened was we didn't have the room in the theater to store everything that was shipped in for the opening of the theater. So a lot of things were on the loading dock in the other part of campus. And I assumed those 40 lights that I had ordered were sitting in storage. Well, I called them up. I was never so surprised. Is the day when the Tuesday before we opened on that Saturday, I said, well, here you go. You can be in here now. Here you can be in the theater. Pittsburgh Stage just finished putting the curtains in, and the rigging company had just finished putting the rigging in for the fly system. And I said, okay, you can deliver the lights. I called shipping. I said, what lights? So it's like, okay, I called Pittsburgh Stage, who I'd ordered these from. I said, where are my Fresnels, my lights? Oh, we didn't order them. I said, oh, really? I need them for Saturday. So it was quite a shock. So that's Friday. We were having the grand opening or the ribbon cutting with all the county officials and the people from the college and local, everybody that was there. And I'm sitting at the ribbon cutting ceremony. I see the truck from Altman Lighting coming in. I ran backstage, which I had rounded up everybody I could think of to help me with lighting and put stuff in, to hang lights, put them in, circuit them, and get them ready to go. Hey, the lights are here. So everybody scrambled around. We worked the rest of that day and evening, and I had brought a friend in from that I had worked with the Gatlin brothers, who was our lighting director, and he was currently working in New York City at the time, and I called him up and said, can I fly you in to help me? He said, sure. So we flew him into Butler, and he helped me focus the lights and get everything circuited and put together. He had actually designed the lighting plot, so he was familiar with that. So he flew in and got it all set up and ready to go, and
you bingo, made it look flawless.
On Saturday, which was an amazing feat.
That's great. That is great. So, you know what I want you also to talk about, if you don't mind, is backstage, because people don't know what it's like backstage. And a lot of people are familiar with, you know, there's food requirements and things like that, but they really don't know what it takes to put a green room together. Talk about what that looked like for you at BC3.
Well, I was quite familiar with how the hospitality, quote-unquote, end of this worked. Whenever you book an artist, there's a couple different things that come with the contract. The hospitality rider is one of them. It tells in there what kind of hotel accommodations they need and what kind of sodas they like to drink and what kind of what they want backstage, if they want bottled water, if they want coffee, tea, yogurt, hummus, whatever they'd want, you know. That comes in that hospitality rider. So then it's up to the venue, which would have been up to me, to make sure I had all those things in place. So without not having a big staff, which is basically was myself and one other person was the main staff for the theater, and that's the way it lasted through 18 and a half plus years, I had to go to the grocery store. I would go and get the stuff and bring it in and set it up backstage so it would be ready for the artists. But it's all part of the deal. It's the same way with the technical rider that comes with the contract. You have to make sure you have everything that they require, especially if it's a musical organization, a musical group band, like something like that. They often require that you provide the drum set or a bass amp or whatever. That has to be provided by the local venue. So you have to make sure that's all in place. Additionally, if we had a dance company or a theatrical company come in, they would often send us a lighting plot that we would have to hang and focus and be ready to go. So we would have to make sure we had to order lights or rent lights, in other words, and have them put in and bring them in and hang them up and circuit them and get them ready to go. So that happened quite a few times over the years.
We had to
take all of our lights down and put their lighting plot in.
What's the strangest food request that you either had to make, prepare, or buy?
Oh, it just... It's strange in the sense that, there's everything. And it's any number of things, a particular brand of soda that they don't even sell in this area. They'd be from out of state. So you have to call the tour manager and say, we don't get that here. Why can I substitute for that? And everybody's normally pretty cool about it because they understand is when they're traveling around the country, things aren't always the same in every city.
Right.
So it worked out. And that's where it comes down to the old thing with the rock and roll tours. I forget what band it was, the Rolling Stones or something. They put in their hospitality writer, no brown M&Ms. And they put it in there specifically to make sure people were reading their hospitality writer.
Ah, okay.
But I came to find out that when people would come in and say, you have everything. I said, well, it was in the rider. Oh, you know, and I've talked to these people that go to so many places that they know everybody, they know that gets ignored. They show up somewhere and they don't know, but nothing's there for that they wanted.
Wow.
And that's right. You know, I always believed that you treated people like you'd want to be treated.
Right, right.
So
yeah.
You're your guest, even though you might be paying them, but they're still your guest. And it's all part of the payment, part of the contract. you provide that services. And that's something that a lot of people don't understand.
Larry, so I know that you're a consummate professional. So when I ask this, I understand the shoes that you wear in this realm where you and I've run into a lot of different artists throughout our career. It's just the nature of what we both do, even though we do different things. But is there an artist that you had to pick up from the hotel or the airport that you were kind of in awe? I mean, you were professional in the moment. You acted like nothing was wrong. But internally, you thought, I can't believe I'm driving this particular person around.
Oh, there was several things like that over the years. And this was just something else that would happen with the was part of the one of the rentals that I had. We had Patch Adams, you know, from the movie that was made famous by Robin Williams playing
yes.
that.
Yeah.
He was actually in the theater for something, and I had to drive him somewhere. It was like, okay, this is interesting. but the first group I had on stage in a public performance was an Israeli dance troupe called Sheik Attack. And I had to actually go to the Pittsburgh airport, pick them up, bring them back to the theater, take them to the hotel, pick them back up, back and forth to the hotel, to the theater. And then I had to take them back to the Pittsburgh airport. So they weren't a big name, but they were incredibly talented. But there was a number of people I've worked with that over the years that I just was in awe of. Molly Mason and Frank Unger and Molly Mason, he wrote the song Ashok and Farewell that was part of the Ken Burns Civil War series. They performed in the theater, and it was like I used to listen to him on Prairie Home Companion. I mean, they were, you know, very well known, and it was just fun to work with them and bring them into the area. Most of the artists that I brought in were not as big as I would like to have had, as my budget didn't afford it. But I always made sure that whatever I brought in was a quality professional entertainment.
And there was a good turnout over the years. I mean, you're talking upwards of 7,000 people a year coming to enjoy what you brought to town. Did you think that kind of number of an audience, did that take time to build? Was it well received automatically of what you were doing, or did word have to get out of what you were bringing to town?
It was a building process. And that 7,000 people includes all of the people from all of the performances, from all of the different community groups, including Musical Theater Guild and Sing Hosanna and Summer Dramatics Project and all of the different rentals that we did over the course of the year. That was the kind of the total number. My biggest shows that I sold out, I probably had less than 10 sellouts over the 18 years. But I was very comfortable if I had 300 people in that audience out of 442 seats. I was very happy with that. And it was a very good, appreciative audience.
Yeah. What's next for these shows? What's next for the shows? Because if you say that you've already retired, and you did in November, and yet the theater at BC3 won't be opening for some time, what happens then? Are they thinking of shows for when it does reopen, or do you have any information?
They are, and I have offered to assist in a volunteer basis when it comes back open again, because my associate, Mike Beck, who is the lone man standing at this point in the theater, who had been, he's keeping back in January, but he was like ready to, you're quitting, you're leaving, you're retiring.
In shock.
So he was a little upset about it. I said I would be back to help. And I've told them, the powers that be, that I said I would assist in them putting together a season again to get it going again. Part of the thing was one of my most difficult parts of the job was to curate the calendar of mixing the rentals that we had every year. The things that happened about the same time every month, each month, every year, versus what I would bring in as performing arts events. So it was kind of a balancing act to make sure that the people, the groups that wanted to rent the theater could get it at the time when they needed it, and I was able to have weekends to be able to present the events for this performing arts series.
Even though you plan on coming back as a volunteer and helping in some way, what's next for you, Larry, as you go into your future?
Well, I'm very much looking forward to doing some traveling. I love to travel, and I would love to be able to. I was looking forward to retiring and able to go to see shows that I hadn't been able to go see prior to this because I was working all the time. Working evenings, weekends, you don't get to go see shows in Pittsburgh or wherever else you'd want to go. So I'm really looking forward to being able to get back and see things in the Pittsburgh area when they are back open again. And we're doing some traveling. It was very odd this fall when I was sitting in my house on a Sunday, on a Saturday night, thinking, "What's wrong? What is?" And, oh, I'm not at work. That's what's wrong. Because for 18 years, I've had no weekends. Basically, I had maybe one weekend a month available that I didn't have to be working at the theater. And even weeknights, I mean, there were many, many weeks that I would be working 60-plus hours in a week because you had to be there for all of the events, all the rehearsals. The local groups, when they're in, they rehearse like five nights, and then they open on a Friday night and do the Friday, Saturday, Sunday afternoon, and you're back again Monday doing everything else. So there's, it was a constant, you were always there.
Yeah.
In fact, remember the last two Octobers, not this year, but the two previous, I think I had 3 days off each of those months because there were so many things going on in the theater at the time that you couldn't get away. And so it's been a very different kind of a getting used to it that I didn't have to be working every night and every weekend. But it's a change. But, I'm to the point that I'm kind of enjoying it. It's kind of nice not to have the stress and have the constant. I've worked many, many, many years over the, years.
Yeah.
I've been working in theater for 27 years, basically, in a capacity like this.
Right.
So I was thinking about how many microphone batteries I had changed, how many microphone cables I had wrapped.
Yeah, thinking, right.
This might be okay. I can deal with this.
Wrap them properly, Larry. Wrap them properly.
there's a way to do it. That's
I know.
Sure.
There is. I learned that.
I'm going back to IT to class technical theater production.
Yeah.
And I'm planning on returning to do that when we can get back in the theater. It's a hands-on class, so it's very difficult to do it remotely. I was able to finish it this last spring because we basically had all those nuts and bolts. We'd covered everything that you had to be in person for. So I was able to finish up online. But I'm going to see. I don't have any. There's not many students signed up for the class for the spring. And if it does go, I will be there to do that. But I think it's more likely I'll be back in the fall that I can actually be there. Part of the grade was for the hands-on helping in the theater.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
We don't have anything in the theater to do. It's kind of difficult to work that out. So,
Larry, let me ask you my last two questions at the same time because I'm just wondering what will you miss the most and what was the most rewarding part of the job?
What I'm going to miss the most are the people and the artists, meeting them, working with them. And, also it just the people there and the students that we were able to share things with and work with the students to expose them to some of these things. Well, I've never seen an orchestra concert before. Well, I've never seen that before. I've never seen this kind of thing before. And to have them experience that for the first time and find out that they really enjoy it, that's very, very rewarding. And then just the other thing that I really enjoyed was the accolades that we got from the audiences and from the artists. We were always told, how much people, how the artists liked performing at the Suck Up Theater. They performed all over the country and sometimes all over the world. And they always complimented us saying, "You guys are up there with everybody else. You guys do the best thing. You do a terrific job here. You're really, really on top of it." So that always made me feel good that we were part of we were running in a very professional theater and in a very professional way.
And you did
and that always made me feel good.
You did such a great job, Larry. And we do appreciate everything that you've done. And that's why I wanted to talk to you and get your story and just reminisce a little bit. Larry Stock, former director of the BC3 Cultural Center for 19 years, now retired. And we wish you the best, Larry, as you go into your future.
Thank you so much, Tracy. I want to thank WBUT or the Public Radio Network for WISR, WBUT, WLER. I want to thank you, the network, for being so supportive of the Suck Up Theater the whole time I was there. Well, thank you.
Thank you, Larry. And take care, and thanks for your time.
Yeah, and happy New Year to you.